someone to love. Sweetheart and nails, sugar and kiss.
Podcasting from Studio 2520, somewhere near Akron, Ohio, and live via the paid subscription of Zencastr, the campus of Otterbein University, at a very special location for this particular show, the Palace Hotel Ballroom at beautiful Lake Quazipamani, only because I love this song. This is Tackling the Chicane. Everybody Needs Somebody to Love, released 1966 on the Wilson Pickett album and immortalized forever in our hearts from the 1979 release The Blues Brothers. Started as a sketch comedy on Saturday Night Live and then became one of the greatest movies of all time. And this is one of the greatest songs off of that particular soundtrack. So highly recommend that you throw that into your playlist when you're jamming down from Akron to Columbus. I think you'll go from A to Z on that one.
A soundtrack that I've heard a few times in my life, whether it be from, of course, yourself or just watching the movie in general. I think I screened that movie a few months ago with some friends after not seeing it for a while. Definitely just, like you said, an all-timer. Still funny to this day. I mean, I know you were kind of raised on that movie. Obviously came out when you were a young lad, but definitely one of my all-time favorites as well.
Yeah. Good stuff. And we really didn't even get into the soul food kitchen scene, which is iconic as well. So, and a lot of great notable musicians as well in that movie.
Yeah.
Guys from Booker T and the MGs, and a bunch of other sort of late 60s legends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Just in that scene alone that you were talking about, you had, of course, Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles, Ray's Music Exchange, John Lee Hooker,
Lou Marini.
Yeah. Yeah.
Donald Duck Dunn.
Yeah,
it goes on from there. So if any of the listeners are musically inclined, which I think some of your friends are, mm-hmm. dip into that.
Yeah, definitely great movie. Yeah, really all that needs to be said, and it kind of leads us into sort of the mood on the podcast here as we enter into one of the better stretches of the calendar for really both sports that we kind of have a focal point on. We'll kick it off on the soccer side of things, as basically we're kind of dealing with pretty much breaking news at this point, just with the nature of our recording schedule on Thursday nights. In the past 24 hours, it has been officially confirmed on the field of play that Celtic have been crowned champions of Scotland once again. That is now three. Yeah. Obviously, you know, our allegiance is pretty well worn here. But that is now three on the bounce since Rangers last lifted that title in 2021. The 54th in club history, which gets them to within one of Rangers for the most titles in Scottish football history, and has really been kind of the icing on the cake for what has ended up being a pretty, I would say, exceptional last month or two of the season. Now, I know, you know, we had been on the show a few times this season and been kind of less than impressed with some of Celtic's performances. But things have really rounded into form to end the season. And we'll get into it firstly. But the Glasgow derby that took place last Saturday was a great example of the way that these two teams finished the season. Obviously Celtic in great form, Rangers not so much. And I guess we can just go ahead and kind of get into the pageantry of the event here. Celtic took on Rangers at Celtic Park last Saturday in the final league meeting between these two teams for the season. And it was pretty much it was Celtic needing to win to basically put the icing on the cake for the title, and Rangers obviously needing a win to stay within contention. And I think, you know, most of the business was done in the first half, as I'm sure you are aware. But I don't know, kind of take me through your overall perspective of this game in particular.
Yeah, so first of all, I think that we had contribution from a lot of players in this particular match. We saw O'Reilly, who, you know, is obviously very dynamic, but a free kick in the 8th minute, wide right for O'Reilly, but then in the 35th, Forrest to O'Reilly scores the 1-0 goal. Mm-hmm. Nice to see an assist from Forrest.
Yeah.
Well, O'Reilly's he's a pretty hot shoe.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I took away from this match in general is we saw Maeda, who was a pivotal player in this match, Carter Vickers, you know, all the guys that we want to see, or that I want to hear their names when this club plays,
mm-hmm.
played in this match. Maeda from Vickers, 2-0. Own goal, yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll take that.
Uh-huh.
Barisic to Sterling. Like I said, it just, everybody was kind of in the game. It wasn't, mm-hmm. it wasn't the sort of typical, sometimes mid-season match where there's just a lot of ticky-tack.
Mm-hmm.
I use that term endearment from one of the guys at the pub that we watch the games in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember his name, but he's an old guy and he does not like ticky-tack football. So
yeah, I believe that's Mike, if I'm not mistaken, from the Cleveland Celtics supporters.
Yeah.
Shout out to them.
Shout out to them. And but yeah, just this match was probably one of the more entertaining ones that I've seen this year.
For sure. And, yeah.
You know, it wasn't a gimme for at any point. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we go 2-1 into half, if I'm correct with my note keeping here. But yeah, I was a little bit was a little nervous. I didn't, you know, I wasn't sure that we could pull it out, but yeah.
Yeah, it was like it usually is with this match. It's kind of explosive, you know, on the pitch. Usually some great goals are scored. These two teams are obviously fairly evenly matched, although, you know, Celtic have gotten the lion's share of the results between the two teams this season. But it started out, I would say, a little bit more tame than in recent meetings. If you can cast your mind all the way back to a month ago when these two teams met, and Celtic score in 21 seconds with Daizen Maeda. Whereas, you know, we had to wait a little bit longer, 35 minutes in, where, as you kind of laid out, Matt O'Reilly, who, yeah, you said had the hot foot. I mean, it's scorching hot at the moment. Probably so much so that I think smart money is on him being sold this summer for a pretty nice penny for the club, as he will move on probably to bigger and better things. But a well-worked goal, like you said, James Forrest involved there to make that goal happen. James Forrest is a player that's really kind of exploded off of from out of nowhere, really, this season. He's a guy that has been with the club forever and has kind of been on the fringes of the squad until recently, and he's really made a great contribution to the club in this final leg of the season. I do have to point out, you know, again, like you mentioned, that John Lundstrom own goal, a pretty terrible performance all around, one he's going to want to forget for Rangers. Obviously, that own goal, which was a little bit of just bad, wrong place, wrong time, or maybe right place, wrong time, trying to block that cross that comes in, goes into his own net. You know, that's kind of a shit happens moment for him. But then, if you remember, I don't know if you made note of this, but he gets sent off in the, I believe it was the second half.
47th minute.
Okay, yeah. End of the first half.
If you
remember, he puts in the most, one of the nastiest tackles I've seen in a minute, studs up on Alistair Johnston, just completely cleans him out, doesn't get even a sniff of the ball, and that's pretty much the most obvious red you'll ever see. I don't know if you picked up on this, but on the commentary, Kenny Miller of Rangers affiliation was convinced it was not a red card.
I have a note here that says the booth keeps saying no.
Yeah,
it's not a card. So that's one of the more entertaining things about watching this particular league is the booth can be fairly what's the word? They in some form or fashion are rooting for specific teams.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've seen that in Major League Baseball for sure. But it was interesting to listen to his commentary about how that was, there was no way that was a foul, and clearly it was, it doesn't get any clearer than that.
It was pretty nasty. We haven't seen a straight red from a horrible tackle in the Old Firm in quite a while. That was a very retro Old Firm tackle there. Pretty bad. Bad day all around for John Lindstrom. And if you're a Rangers fan, I can't even imagine how pissed off you'd be at him. You know, these are games, obviously, you have to win. And I think at the end of the season, you're going to look back to performances from John Lindstrom and other players like that and just go, I mean, this is exactly where it went wrong. You know, this is where it went wrong for Rangers.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the management of this Celtic club throughout the season had its pitfalls, but at the end of the day, put collectively together a strategy that basically drove them to the championship. So, say what you will, I think that as you said earlier in the season, we didn't have great confidence in the strategy of play, but it ended up working out for them. So yeah,
and you have to give some kudos to Brendan Rodgers, Celtic manager, who came in back to the job. He'd had tenure before a few years ago. Comes back to the job, not liked by the fans, just due to the way he left before to join Leicester City in the Premier League. Comes back, fans aren't really in love with him. And think about the shoes he has to fill. You know, Big Ange last season and the season before totally revitalized the club. I mean, if you remember to last season, we got on the show and talked about beating Dundee United 9-0 and thrashing Rangers 4-0 at home. And let's be honest, last season, pretty much just trotting to the title, you know? Whereas this season, especially you look till about January, February, it was Rangers always right there, even in the lead for many months, many weeks of this season. Losing to Hearts at home, turning in pretty bad performances away to Kilmarnock and other teams like that. And I think you have to give him kudos for the way he's really whipped this team into form late in the season. And he's, I think, built the team and set him up to hopefully win a cup double in about a week's time, as they face Rangers again in the Scottish Cup. But I want to talk a little bit about last night, and I'm not totally sure how much of this you got to catch, just because it was the middle of the work day for you, but Celtic took on Kilmarnock to basically clinch the title, just had to avoid a loss, and they pretty much just ran riot against Kilmarnock, a classic Celtic performance, which is one we haven't seen too often this season, but has kind of come into form when it really mattered.
Yeah, I got to see most of the second half of that match. And at that point, they were already up 3-0. Confidence builder there for the boys. But what I took away from that second half was how they were trying so hard to get Kyogo a goal.
Yeah.
And deservedly. Mm-hmm. Fun match to watch, obviously, because, you know, I don't think that Kilmarnock had anything really in their back pocket for this particular team. It was more of a fun side match to watch, fun show to watch, and trying to make sure that Kyogo could score, and he had several opportunities to do so, but unfortunately couldn't get one into the basket. So
yeah, a season for him that not going to go down as a classic. Injury troubles and just I think maybe adjusting to a different style of play under Brendan Rodgers. He hasn't scored I didn't know this until yesterday. He has not scored a goal away from Celtic Park this season. So you can kind of see where the team is coming from, really trying to give them that opportunity to score away to Kilmarnock. Just quick highlights with this one. Adam Ida, the loanee striker from Norwich, opens up the scoring within 5 minutes. A beautiful cross comes into him, 1-0. 7 minutes later, Dyson Maeda gets on the scoreboard to make it 2-0. At that point, you're pretty much done and dusted. James Z. Forrest, again, rounding into great form for the end of the season, 35th minute to make it 3-0. And then a Matt O'Reilly double, who I think has been Celtic's player of the season, to clinch the title for Celtic. Basically, you know, I think, like I said, there was probably moments where we didn't really think this was going to happen this season. But the team should feel very confident heading into the Scottish Cup final. And I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be ultra confident in this team's ability to beat Rangers a final time this season and hopefully lift another trophy, honestly.
And that match is when?
That is Saturday, May 25th at 10 a.m.
Right in the midst of the IndyCar weekend.
Yeah, so it's going to be, I'm assuming, a bit of a wash. Now, obviously, we're going to be focusing heavily on the Indy 500, as that's pretty much moral obligations there. So we will kind of just take that one in stride, I think. I'll be around here, so I'll be paying attention to that match most definitely. So there you can, there you have it, really, with the Scottish Premiership season. One match remains. Celtic plays St. Mirren, where they will prance around the field for 90 minutes and then lift the league trophy, basically. And that'll be that. And then, you know, it'll kind of be, you know, obviously we're going to be busy with the Euros and Copa America over the summer, but also keeping one eye towards South Bend come July for preseason.
Yeah, so with that, I know we're slated for that match. I was trying to remember today, did we dip into the match that's going to be played in, I think it's in Columbus, right?
Yeah, I think Chelsea and Manchester City are playing each other in Columbus, if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, I just I got an email today and I was like, I don't think I got tickets for that, but
no, yeah, that is at the Horseshoe in Columbus. Okay. Yeah.
Are you planning to possibly go, or
I don't know. I mean, if the tickets were fairly reasonable, which I'm assuming they're kind of not going to be, just because it's Chelsea and Man City, two Premier League teams going at it. Yeah. Also, I don't really ever look for an excuse to go to the Horseshoe. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll see. Yeah. But those three clubs are all kind of involved in a United States tour involving some MLS teams. I think the Crew are actually playing Aston Villa at the Crew Stadium in August as well.
Looking forward to the South Bend in July, and I have to book some accommodations ASAP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, really looking forward to it, just to meet up with a lot of people. I mean, obviously, I'm sure we will see the Cleveland boys there. But many of the North American Celtic supporters groups will, of course, be in attendance. Detroit, Pittsburgh, Columbus, all represented. So definitely excited for that, but that's sort of down the line yet. Yeah. Briefly, before shifting here, I do want to discuss a little bit of English Premier League action. Man United versus Arsenal. Now, I do know this ended up not being the most enthralling match to ever watch.
I have two notes.
Yeah. And I think what this is really about is providing context for the Premier League title race. So, as we know, it is basically between Manchester City and Arsenal at this point. And this match, in hindsight, now with more recent results, ended up not being super important. So, Man City played Tottenham on Tuesday, and basically they needed to win in order to take the lead in the Premier League title, and basically in order to all but clinch it. So the final Premier League match day is Sunday, and Man City play West Ham, and Arsenal play, hold on just one second, Everton. Those two games, Man City you would expect to beat West Ham, Arsenal you would expect to beat Everton, which means if results, both of those results happen, Man City will be crowned champion. I think at this point the bookmakers have it at like 95% chance of Man City winning the league. Basically, Arsenal needed Tottenham to beat or at least draw against Man City on Tuesday, and it didn't happen. So, barring a pretty unlikely defeat for Man City against West Ham, they will lift the Premier League title for an unprecedented fourth season running. So honestly, that's kind of made the Manchester United versus Arsenal match a bit of a dead rubber, if I'm being completely honest. Just briefly, the goal in this one, Arsenal end up winning 1-0, comes from Leandro Trossard. Pretty shambolic defending from Casemiro, who keeps Kai Havertz onside, and a nice chipped pass comes in, and Trossard finds the ball basically for a tap-in to make it 1-0. And at this point, and it's no secret, as we've covered Man United quite a bit recently, they are pretty terrible. and don't really offer much in terms of fight in this one.
Yeah. Agreed. Two note lines says it all for me. So this was a FF match is what I call when I'm like fast forwarding.
Yeah. And I was really hoping this would be a better one. Obviously it didn't really turn out to be. And I was hoping by the time we recorded, it would still have a decent amount of stakes attached, but I'm afraid not so much. So a reminder, the final Premier League match day is Sunday, in Manchester City. If they win pretty much if they win, they will be champions. If they lose and Arsenal win, then Arsenal will be champions, but it's very unlikely Man City fail to win against West Ham at home, as West Ham have nothing to play for. So I'm assuming they're just going to kind of lie down. So that is basically that. We'll definitely keep an eye on the final Premier League match day for sure. And we will, I'm not sure what next, and this is sort of a tangent, but I'm not sure what next week's show is actually going to look like. Cause I know
it will be, a no show for next week because we will be in Indianapolis.
Okay.
On Thursday night, unless you want to do a Wednesday night, which I could.
I actually probably could swing that if you want, in what we could do. And this is sort of behind the scenes TTC for our listeners, but if you wanted to do sort of a preview, Indy 500 preview, perhaps. Obviously, yeah. There's an F1 race that we'll have to discuss, so it'll probably be largely racing focused. But
I don't see a reason why we can't do a Wednesday show before the big weekend. So yeah. Let's plan on that for sure. Okay. With that being said, before we dip into F1, let's talk a little bit about the Ferrucci versus Grosjean and what that entails. I have waited for 20 some odd years for a Foyt driver or team. Nothing better could happen at the Indy 500 than a Foyt car winning. And that would bring the entire world of IndyCar racing to its knees. So I'm very hopeful that Ferrucci is going to qualify well for the 500. But I like his attitude. And, you know, they had a road race there last weekend where basically, you know, Ferrucci gave Grosjean the finger, which is exactly what this league needs. We need something because let's face it. Andretti and Penske cars, they're all in a line. And the drivers are good, but no one wants to say anything or be the guy who creates something in the background. And that's what I like about this this Foyt team is, hey, we're here and I don't give a shit, you know, if you raced an F1 or not. This is IndyCar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of love the fire that Ferrucci brings to the sport, and I know he is not particularly well-liked by a lot of the, I would say, kind of diehards of the sport, like, you know, the people that are watching week in, week out, practice, qualifying. They don't particularly love his style of racing, which is quite aggressive, almost Magnussen-esque, if I'm kind of bringing it into F1. Sort of a doesn't really take much shit kind of guy. So, and I think he said that in his interview, like, mess with the bull, you get the horns. So Grosjean, we know, has a tendency to kind of be a little whiny. So I don't know. I kind of back Ferrucci in this one. And as we get into the month of May, and obviously the 500 is the event that makes this series kind of go around. But I thought the road race Indy GP was a great event this time around. Alex Palou got the win. He's been sort of the class of the field in this series for a while now with Ganassi. So I'm kind of right now, if you're not a Penske driver, I'm kind of fine if you win, to be honest. But I think Palou once again kind of sets himself up for the month of May where he technically sets himself up to sweep the month. Now, he last year won the GP, then won the Indy 500 pole, and then didn't quite get it done in the 500. But that is a racer that has every opportunity to do that.
I think it's important to remember that the Penske's and Ganassi's and now McLaren, who has splashed into Indy 500 in the last few years with a giant dive. It's important to remember that, you know, the Foyt teams and the some of the other teams, they just don't have the funding that mm-hmm. some of these giant mega race teams have.
Yeah.
But yet it's still, you know, AJ Foyt is a legend and they obviously have a chance. And, mm-hmm. you know, same thing with Ray Hall, Letterman Lanigan. I would love to see, you know, Sato is going to have a car. Ray Hall is going to have a car. I always go into that weekend hopeful that I would love to see just a small guy take that checkered flag.
Yeah. And
for once,
it would be pretty refreshing. You know, last year, the big dog, Joseph Newgarden with Penske, year before that, Armstrong with Ganassi. So, yeah, it would be pretty nice to see a smaller team. And Ferrucci, now, from my perspective, last year in the main grandstand, when he took the lead of that race, I mean, the place went nuts, pretty much. Now,
well, most Indianapolis 500 veteran race fans would roll over and die to see a Foyt car win.
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed.
Yeah. And
we'll see.
Just quickly on the RLL thing, you know, we've had a couple practice sessions now, and usually, not always, but usually, you can get a pretty good idea of where drivers are going to land in terms of qualifying from practice. And it, let's just say, compared to last year, RLL looking much, much stronger. Remember last year, Graham Rahal actually got bumped out of the race entirely.
Right.
Ended up driving due to some injury and from another driver. But I don't think it's going to end up being like that for him, much to, I'm sure, his excitement. And obviously, you know, this weekend, I think I might have said this last week, but I'll just reiterate. With qualifying, I think it's just as compelling as the race, just because it is so unbelievably hard to win from the back of the field, and also the drama of a car going home because only 33 are going to start. So, yeah. I don't know. Great excitement for sure.
Yep. So we will slate a Wednesday show for next week to talk more about the Indy 500, and at some point TCC will do a show from Fishers, but can't do it without my engineer, so
yeah,
it won't be this year, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so F1 coming up. Emilia Romagna 2024.
Yes.
So the Italian race.
Back in that particular region of Italy for the first time since 2022. Remember last year, this race actually got rained out. That place experienced some pretty severe flooding the weekend of that GP, and didn't end up a go. So honestly, I don't remember much from 2022, and I think it was pre this show's existence. So this is sort of a maybe a bit of an unknown in terms of what to expect. I know you will probably provide us some specs here of the track and a little bit of the history. So I'll allow you to do that now.
All right. So let me scroll down here to some circuit stats here. Yeah, so this is the Autodromo Enzo e Dino Ferrari is the name of the course. Mm-hmm. And we have its first GP in 1980. 63 laps, course length 4.9 kilometers, lap record. Lewis Hamilton 2020 ran it in a 1:15.4 and change. Actually, the track was built in October of 50. So this may be one of the very first tracks that F1 raced on in 52. Says circuit began racing in 53. So ready for testing in 52, but 53. So yeah, this was very, there's a lot of history here at this track.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it'll be a entertaining race for sure. I would love to see sort of kind of the same, I don't know. We'll see what Red Bull brings to this track, mm-hmm. but obviously being in Italy, Ferrari is going to be a great presence there. So if we can get a couple of those guys on the podium, that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure the Tifosi will make themselves known. Probably some red smoke at the beginning of this one. And if a Ferrari is able to do well and maybe even perhaps nag a win there, that would be a fantastic result for that team, obviously. It kind of feels a long time ago now, just with the nature of how much sports we consume here. But Lando Norris is the current most recent winner in F1, so obviously we'll look to see how he is able to build off of that, or maybe not build off of that, whether or not there will be perhaps a small hangover from his previous performance. And
well, I think this McLaren team is probably our best shot at unseating at this point. Mercedes has kind of just lackluster here and there.
Almost firmly mid-pack at this point.
And then I always go back to, can the Haas team get 8 or a 10?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Give me a point.
Yeah, I mean, the points are kind of increasing importance. You know, Alpine maybe have turned a corner as well with finally a point last time out in Miami. And there's still, is it 3 teams that have not scored, or maybe it's only 2 now? Williams and Sauber, I think, are the only 2 teams who have not scored World Championship point.
Yeah, let me just get to driver standings, and we'll just do top five here. Max, 136. Perez, 103. Leclerc, 98. Lando Norris with 83. And then Sainz with 83 as well, rounding out the top five. Constructors may be a little bit more endearing here, potentially. Let's see. So Red Bull's fairly out in front with 239, and then Ferrari 187, Mercedes 124, or McLaren, I'm sorry, with 124, and then Mercedes 64. Actually, Aston Martin is fifth in the constructors' standings right now, which is pretty amazing. And that's all Alonso.
Yeah, Stroll has been pretty much terrible this season. Any of that sort of perhaps little burst of skill that he seemed to have acquired early last year has gone at this point, and he is still pretty much a just dead weight.
Let's face it, he's racing because daddy owns the team. So.
I mean, yeah. That's...
And he's a tool.
Oh my God. I mean, the biggest douchebag on the grid, probably. We sat and watched the Miami press conference, and here's the thing. Look, I understand. The drivers don't want to be there answering questions, especially the same two questions. Sergio, how do you feel about Adrian Newey leaving? And the 600 millionth question about Lewis Hamilton joining Ferrari. Right. Now, I understand it probably kind of sucks, but you don't have to. No one is asking you to give smart-ass one-word replies to everything and have a dumb fucking smirk on your face the entire time, especially when you're terrible. So, you know, it was just funny because they were talking a lot about these drivers' futures because next season still is like half the grid has no idea where they're going to be. And there sits fucking Lance Stroll with his smirk on his face because he knows his seat will never be challenged. Right. So, I don't know. Just a little rant there, but...
No, you're not off base at all. And so fifth is Aston Martin with 42 points. So if you look at the delta between Red Bull and fifth, we're talking about a lot of points.
Mm-hmm.
But Haas clinging to a seventh position with 19 points right behind Aston Martin. And I truly feel that this Haas team can finish this year. I would love to see them in sixth position, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Because honestly, after that, it goes pretty profoundly downhill. Alpine has 1 point under them. And then let me see here. Yeah, so Williams and Sauber have zero.
Yeah, I would expect Williams eventually to grab a point. Sauber, pretty terrible, pretty rotten.
I mean, the Williams team has their own issues.
Yeah, well, just announced that Albon had signed a multi-year extension.
So he's good.
Yeah, so he's dialed in, I think. No,
American buddy, probably not so much.
I think we are on a week-by-week basis with Logan Sargeant. There's a lots of rumors flying around the paddock. The name I keep hearing is Andrea Kimi Antonelli of F2 fame. 17-year-old racer in the Mercedes program that perhaps could move to Williams before the season is done. But here's the thing with that, is putting a 17-year-old who was in F3 18 months ago any better than Logan Sargeant? I don't think so.
But I think that F1 is on the path of making sure that at some point, and it may be 2025 or 6, there will be at least one, maybe two female drivers that pilot a car in the series. And mm-hmm. good. I mean, as it should be. If yeah. they have the chops, then go.
Yeah. And there's always the sort of the push for youth. Antonelli is 17, obviously, so he does have the proper super license points, but you would have to make a exception to the rule, as you have, you're supposed to be 18 to race in F1. So we'll see. I don't know. That's still rumor mill stuff. But we do know now that Albon will be there next year, and almost entirely certain it will not be with Logan Sargeant. So that's another driver that we can tick off, along with the likes of Hulkenberg recently, switching to Sauber. Still no real news with Carlos Sainz, who is kind of the real big free agent player here. He's been pretty cryptic. He doesn't seem to know exactly where he's going to land just yet.
I would think that he'll land at Mercedes.
It's possible.
And then, you know, we also have to think about where Perez might end up after this season.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Perez has been better this season so far than what he finished on, at least last season. The thing is, Red Bull are comfortable where they're at. The Newey thing kind of has thrown a little bit of a spin on everything, just because he's kind of the mastermind of the design of that car. Not that Red Bull don't have a great technical staff, but there is increasing sort of rumblings that Verstappen is perhaps not in love with the fact that Newey is gone. And there seems to be a little bit of flirtation from Toto Wolff. And I don't want to say with Verstappen, but I don't know. I don't think it's totally impossible, and not even talking about like next year, but before Verstappen is done in F1, to see him make a pretty large move a la a Hamilton to Ferrari. But that's all kind of yeah. rumor mill stuff at this point.
Right. So we shall see.
Yeah, it's still pretty much in the we'll see mode with a lot of these guys. But as the season rolls on, and I'm sure as the summer break approaches, that'll sort of round into form. Obviously, the race this weekend in Italy to look forward to. We'll see if Verstappen can get back to where he was, or if other challengers can play a role. Obviously, Indy 500 qualifying and all of the pomp and circumstance of the month of May in Indianapolis to look forward to. Celtic will lift the league trophy against St. Mirren, and we will see the final chapter in the Premier League season as well this weekend. So once again, a big one ahead. So probably if things go to plan, an earlier show next week, before we send half of the show off to the promised land, the holy land that is IMS.
Yes.
All right.
So with that, I think we're ready.
Yeah, I think
get going.
I think that'll do it for this time around.
Okay. Four executive producers, and we have a lot. Richard Tanaka, Jimmy Hill, Bob Ritter, Paula Ritter, Bobby Callahan, Deborah Callahan, Brooks Noble, Seamus O'Shaughnessy, Brett Hogle, Katie Hogle. This has been Tackling the Chicane. We'll see you next time.